Plus 49.
Bienvenidos to another edition of Plus 49. I am your host, Sigrid Arteaga, and we're thrilled to have you with us today. On today's show, we're diving into something a little bit more political, but of course, just as vital. The Koalitionsvertrag. What does it mean for us, for the international community? Political advisor Peter Alberto Behrens will join us to help us unpack it. We'll also take a little turn as we explore how Easter is celebrated here in Germany. Of course, from traditional treats to the Easter bunny and what makes it such a special time across the country. And we've got some news. Plus 49 will be live at the I Am Expat Fair on May the 17th. It's happening here in Berlin, and we can't wait to meet you all in person. The entry is totally free. So mark your calendars and come to say hi. Registration can be under www.iamexpat.de. So let's get into it. It is a new week, and Germany may soon have a new government. After weeks of tense negotiations, Germany's next government is taking shape. CDU, CSU, and SPD have officially agreed on a coalition pact. CDU leader Friedrich Merz is expected to become the new chancellor, with both coalition partners promising stability. But it also comes with big changes. The coalition says it wants to kickstart the sluggish economy, tackle the skilled labor shortage, and tighten migration rules. So, what does this mean for expats and internationals? Well, on migration, the new pact introduces stricter rules. Rejections at the EU border will be possible even for those asylum seekers. Family reunification will be paused for refugees with only limited protection for at least 2 years. And the fast-track naturalization after 3 years for highly integrated immigrants will be reversed. But dual citizenship will stay, and the standard path to citizenship remains 5 years. When it comes to skilled labor, the focus shifts inwards. This means the government plans to invest more in early education and students' aids like BAföG. However, there are new policies to actively attract international talents or streamline work visa procedures. And just as Germany looks inwards to revive its economy, it's facing growing pressure from the outside, particularly from Washington. In trade news, the European Union has announced a 90-day pause on the planned countermeasures against the U.S. tariffs. The move follows U.S. President Donald Trump's decision to temporarily suspend parts of his sweeping tariff package, which included a 20% import duty on EU goods and 25% tariffs on cars, steel, and aluminium. The IW Institute in Köln warns that Trump's full tariff plan could cost Germany up to 200 billion euros over 4 years. Despite the temporary pause, the EU says it's ready to activate its own 21 billion euros counter-tariff if negotiations break down. For now, both sides are trying to cool tensions, at least on the surface. That's our dose of geopolitics for today. It is time for the Easter Bunny. Well, it's actually also that time of the year when the signs of spring are everywhere. And Germany is getting ready to celebrate one of the most important holidays on the Christian calendar, Easter. But beyond its religious significance, Easter in Germany is a celebration of age-old custom, traditions, and moments for families to come together. So let's take a closer look. At its core, Easter celebrates the resurrection of Jesus Christ, making the end of the 40-day period of Lent that begins on Ash Wednesday. This period of fasting and reflection comes to a joyful end on Easter Sunday, the most important day in the Christian year. The exact date of Easter changes every year, falling on the first Sunday after the first full moon following the vernal equinox. This year, Easter Sunday will fall on April the 20th, with Easter Monday on April the 21st. But while the date may vary, the traditions and festivities remain the same. Easter traditions in Germany are not just about religion. It's also about celebrating the arrival of spring and the hope of new life. And one of the most beloved Easter traditions in Germany is Easter Bunny. Oh no, not only that. It's painting and dyeing of eggs. And while the origins of the tradition are debated, it's clear that eggs have been associated with Easter and centuries. Early Christians even dyed eggs red to symbolize the blood of Christ. Today, you can find a great selection of decorating eggs in all your Pinterest page. And of course, they're often displayed on Easter branches or hidden in gardens and homes for an Easter egg hunt. Again, this is where the Easter bunny comes. Yes, I'm very happy and excited about Easter. Speaking of Easter egg hunts, this is another favorite festivity and activity among German children. Known as Eiersuchen, the tradition involves, yes, you know it, the Easter bunny, hiding decorated eggs or small gifts for children to find. A special Easter treat is the Osterzopf, a braided sweet bread that's often enjoyed during breakfast or with afternoon tea. It's soft, fluffy, and slightly sweet taste that makes favorite for families to share. And because Easter is also a time to indulge in delicious sweets, after the sacrifices of Lent, Germans dive into a wide array of chocolates and candies, while the most popular treats are chocolate bunnies. So, as Easter approaches, maybe you're joining in the festivities or just enjoying the season spirit. It is a good time also to reflect, recharge, look ahead to brighter and more importantly, warmer days. The only news that we have been hearing probably the past couple of days has been about the Koalitionsvertrag and how the new government is putting itself together. And for that, we have a specialist with us. He's a political advisor and he does public affairs by heart. He's one of the greatest networkers in Berlin and he's today with us, Peter Alberto Behrens. And welcome, Alberto.
Thank you very much, Sigrid.
So great to have you with us. First of all, let us know a little bit about you and what is actually a political advisor.
Good question. I'll start with saying Peter Alberto, or my name, kind of is the definition of what my origin is, because I would define myself as Latino-German. I have German roots, and at the same time, I have roots from Paraguay. But I have lived in up to six different Spanish-speaking countries, so that's why I call myself Latino-German and not especially Paraguayo-German. So anyway, I've been living, as I said, in different Spanish-speaking countries, and I came to Germany as a grown-up. When I was 19 for studying political sciences, of course, first in Bonn, then in Mainz. I came from Spain. I was living and studying there. So in a way, it was weird because I was German, or I am German by nationality, but Germany was kind of a different or a strange country to me, as I never have been living in Germany, and I have much more had a socialization in Spain and Venezuela and Paraguay and different countries of Spain and Latin America. So that kind of wraps it up. And what is a political advisor? Well, I'm working as a political advisor already since 30 years. So I have some gray hair on my top. So that means mainly that I have to do with helping companies, but as well foundations, institutions, in on one hand, dealing with political sensitive issues, and how to convey them to specific stakeholders. And on the other hand, dealing with political stakeholders themselves. So I get in touch with parliamentarians. I get in touch with members of the government. I speak to representatives and so on. And mainly this is what I do with a specialization within the German Latin American context.
As someone who has been living in a lot of different countries and someone who understands Germany and the political issues at the moment, can you make a little resume about the Koalitionsvertrag and what are we expecting from it?
Good question. And particularly if I would know that by heart, I would probably be rich by now. But anyway, I think, yeah, we have a lot of challenges ahead. We're kind of not really in the past, but not in the future already. So it's kind of a in between, which is a bit difficult for all of us to really comprehend. But I think it is clear to everyone that Germany, and not only Germany, but Europe as a whole and the world, we are having some times of uncertainty. And nevertheless, I think that the fact that both parties have been able to set up a government plan, so to say, I think it's an achievement that shouldn't be understated. And I'm pretty optimistic that at least this government is going to do a job that is according to the times we're having. So yes, I'm optimistic, cautiously optimistic, so to say.
We are back with Peter Alberto Behrens. As someone who has been living in a lot of different countries and someone who understands Germany and the political issues at the moment, can you make a little resume about the Koalitionsvertrag and what are we expecting from it?
Good question. And particularly if I would know that by heart, I would probably be rich by now. But anyway, I think, yeah, we have a lot of challenges ahead. I think that this coalition agreement, in a way, is not that different as the coalition agreements before. And in a way, it is different. We're kind of not really in the past, but not in the future already. So it's kind of a in between, which is a bit difficult for all of us to really comprehend. But I think it is clear to everyone that Germany, and not only Germany, but Europe as a whole and the world, we are having some times of uncertainty. And nevertheless, I think that the fact that both parties, the Social Democrats and the Christian Democrats, have been able to set up a government plan, so to say, which is kind of unique because you don't have this in other countries in Europe or elsewhere. But being able to set something up in that regard, I think it's an achievement that shouldn't be understated. And I'm pretty optimistic that at least this government is going to do a job that is according to the times we're having. So yes, I'm optimistic, cautiously optimistic, so to say.
You're one of the not the majority, let's put it that way. Not the majority of people are very optimistic about what's happening. But let's break it down a little bit about one of the key topics, that it's migration. What does the Koalitionsvertrag or the coalition agreement says about migrants?
So, as you know, Friedrich Merz, to be chancellor, because he has to be elected, but it's more or less a done deal. He was very outspoken on being very tough on illegal migration. I think that's the point. We're talking about illegal and irregular migration. And if you analyze the coalition agreement, yes, they have pushed through some of the things that particularly the Christian Democrats wanted to push through, that were a tougher regulation on illegal and irregular migration. But they didn't go as far as planned, if you like. So in broader terms, I think that the focus was on limiting irregular migration. And that's my take on this, what I miss within the broader scope of migration policy is kind of a strategy. Because the thing is, on one hand, I would think that no one really doubts that you have to control migration. You have to know who's coming into your country and not. It's not about kicking off people. It's just knowing who is going to be entering the country and who not. And the other thing is, we have to be able to attract those we need. In Germany, we need people, and a lot of people. So what I miss is linking these two issues together and saying, we want to keep out those who we really don't need and who probably will do a better job in their own countries. And we do want to let in people that we need specifically. And honestly, I think there's nothing bad about it. Every country should do the same. And to be honest, as I was living in Venezuela or Spain or Argentina, Bolivia, I was as mad about these Germans coming over, living there for 5 or 6 or 10 years, not speaking a word of Spanish, not wanting to integrate. It's the same way around. If you come to a country, you expect the guests to try at least to mingle in, to integrate, to nobody wants to make a German out of you. That's not the point. It's about having an attitude of wanting to be part of something. And I think that's something the host country, whether it is Germany or whether it is Argentina or whatever, has the right to expect. And this is something, again, that I'm missing in terms of a narrative, an overarching narrative of how to deal with people coming to this country in Germany. And it's, again, not about kicking people out. It's about controlling and seeing who is going to fit in, who's wanting to fit in, and these people are welcome. And those who don't want to fit in, well, we have all the right to say, hey, look for another country. There's 180 countries you can choose from.
Yes, and we have to deepen on that. But before we do, let's go on a music. There is a lot to talk about migration and, of course, what's going to be happening in the next couple of years with the new government. We've been talking with Peter Alberto about it, and there's a lack, as he says, on what's going to happen and what's the difference between illegal migration and the people you want to actually bring, migrants who want to be included in the economy, in the German economy. For the German coalition agreement at the moment, there is nothing very focused on how to attract new talent. And with this, I think I'm going to get myself a little bit into trouble, because I don't know how you see this, but I don't think, A, that there is actually a program for a good integration into the German society. And on the other side, I think that the word migrant is no longer accepting the vast diversity that we are. Because I think on this, if they went and says like, we don't like migrants, but they don't specifically talk about the migrants who are actually bringing money and paying taxes and integrating, they're just talking about a type of migrants. I think migration is so diverse as, yeah, globalization and population is. And I think we are lacking here a new name for migrants.
Yes, I totally agree. I mean, the thing, of course, is that in Germany, for many, many years, people have not been really reflecting on the fact that this country is a country that is not ethnically homogeneous as it was probably in the 1950s or 1960s. And we have this famous word of Gastarbeiter, guest worker, coming here in the 60s, 70s. And it's interesting that this definition is guest worker. So you're a guest. You're supposed to leave at one point. And they didn't understand that these people probably didn't want to leave and wanted to stay. And many of them not only stayed, but integrated. And nevertheless, during a lot of time, well into the 1980s, Germans didn't really accept the situation of this new reality. And now we're living in a country in which the population, as far as I heard and as far as I know, 20% or even more has a kind of a migrant origin. So we're kind of, as you said, diverse in terms of which kind of migrants or which kind of people with a foreign origin or foreign roots are living in Germany, are here living. But this is something difficult to assimilate for many of the Germans. And it is, of course, a process that starts with accepting the reality as it is, and then seeing and coping with it in terms of how do we live together. What I think is difficult is that Germans have been lying to themselves in terms of, hey, we're so tolerant, everybody can come and everything's okay, and we're tolerant, we're open. It's not that easy. You have different cultures, you have different religions, you have a different set of values. And the other day I was asked how I did as someone who, yes, was German, but really didn't have a German upbringing in a term, and how I coped with this. To be frank, in the first 5 or 4 years when I was living here, I didn't have German friends. I just was with Latinos and Spanish-speaking people and so on, because I didn't feel at home with Germans. And then I understood two things. One thing is that behind a somewhat tolerant attitude was a very skeptical attitude from Germans. They would tell me, hey, yes, of course, you're welcome. But you would sense that they're not really, really accepting you because they feel that you're somewhat different. Point B is that I understood that doesn't matter. It's not about them. It's about you. It's about you understanding, hey, the people can be as they are. The point is, how do you want to fit in this country? How do you want to be a part of it? And I understood that this country would offer me tons of more opportunities than any other country in which I was living in did offer to me. And honestly, with the time, I could definitely live with, well, Germans not being so welcoming and not so party-like and not so open. That's okay, because you know what? They gave me an opportunity. And honestly, what shall I do with people without, well, I can go party with them and so on, but I still don't have an opportunity. I want to live with, I have a project of life. I want to excel. I want to do something with my life. And I want to have a surrounding that gives me the opportunity to evolve. And that's what Germany gave me and is still giving me. So I'm very grateful for this country. I don't know. That's very philosophical maybe. But anyway, I hope I'm getting myself understood.
Yes, definitely. I think one of the key questions everybody is kind of having, or one of the biggest fears, is Germany gonna be with this government in this political situation going into that rabbit hole the same way as the US is doing regarding migration? And do you believe that under Friedrich Merz, who you just said he was very outspoken against migrants, do you think that, I mean, again, under my opinion, we won't have ICE knocking on our doors, but do you believe that the political sphere is going to be a little bit more against migrants as it was in the past governments?
The short answer is no. I do believe that, well, first of all, we're not in the situation in which the U.S. is. And I'm not speaking in terms of laws and policy. I'm talking about society. We don't have the polarization that we have in the U.S., fortunately. And I do believe that there is a notion being shared even within the left, who was normally very, very pro-migrant, that in general terms, migration itself is not the problem. The problem is legal and irregular migration. And we have that situation since 2015 with the so-called Wir schaffen das, when Angela Merkel lifted more or less the limits and the frontiers in Germany to let in a lot of refugees coming from the Syrian civil war. And that, of course, was a situation that was an exception and nevertheless had a strong backing throughout all the population in Germany and all the nearly all political parties. So the thing is that, in a way, the exception has become normality. And that's the point. A lot of things that have been done to allow people from Syria and other places to come over to Germany were not driven back in the way they should have been driven back to normalcy, so to say. So that led to a lot of confusion in terms of what is now legal, what is not, what is irregular, what is not. So the situation now pushes to have a new kind of setting to know, okay, how do we handle that? So again, I don't think we're going to see the situation that we're seeing in the US, definitely not. But we will have a more tough stance on irregular migration, without doubt. I would wish that this would lead, again, to a more broader discussion in terms of how do we guarantee and how do we control people coming in and out of the country, to be very practical, so to say, regardless of from where they come or not. It's about having clear that that Germany and any other country of this world has the right to say we want to decide on who is coming to us and who not. I think that's very legitimate, a very legitimate right. And that is not against anyone, I think. But it's a very tricky situation because we have in Germany, of course, a very difficult, I think the Nazi past plays a role in this in terms of kind of a guilt feeling, kind of a responsibility that is in the best of intentions, but probably is not very conducive in terms of rationally looking at the problem and evaluating what is the best for all of us, including those who came from other countries. Because I know a lot of people that came from, I don't know, Turkey, Africa, or whatever, and they complain about migrants. Paradoxically, because they say, damn, I came here respecting the rules. I came here trying to integrate. I came here learning the language from day one. And then these other guys come here and think they get a free pass. That's not fair. And they're absolutely right, from my point of view.
It is, I think, a topic that it will take us a lot of hours to discuss. And we would love to have you once again with us once the government is settled in and once we started seeing the key points on migration and, of course, what it's going to be bringing. Needless to say this, and once again, 80% of Germans did not vote for the AfD. And I think that is still very important for all of us who have a migrant background to know that 80% of Germans did not vote for that belief system. So we're still in another place than in the US.
Definitely. And I would even add that even from those who voted AfD, probably not all are really anti-migrants and are much more protest voters. And I would I would challenge to see if they if these guys who voted, if they are really, let's say, racists or anti-migrants. I would doubt that, to be honest.
We hope so. We definitely also hope so. Thank you so much, dear Peter, Pedro Alberto. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Sigrid. A pleasure.
Plus 49. Ask a German.
When I came to Germany and had friends that would say to me, well, let's go for a walk. And the walk was more or less running from in a park 20 kilometers an hour, when in my view, walk is, well, having 3 steps in a minute, not more, and enjoying and looking around and hearing and not dashing. And yeah, it's something that still 30 years after being in Germany is something that, well, I can't grasp it. And I definitely, when I go on a walk, I don't run. I go on a walk. And that means taking my time and not running from one place to the other. So that still is a big question mark, why people have to run when having a walk.
When planning to go on a walk, you might expect a gentle stroll, birds chirping, maybe a slow meander through the forest or a city park. But if you've ever agreed to a Spaziergang with a German, you may have found yourself power walking in what felt suspiciously like an Olympic warm-up. So, what's with the pace? Why do Germans walk so fast, even when there's absolutely no reason to rush? Well, to start with, this all ties back to a deeper cultural thread that by now we've mentioned a lot of times, and I think you already guessed it, efficiency. And with that in mind, in Germany, even relaxation has a sense of structure. A walk isn't just a walk, it's a movement with intention. And sure, they might not be heading anywhere in particular, but either way, they're going to get there quickly. But there's also the practical side. Germans walk a lot. Public transportation is theoretically quite good, but with Deutsche Bahn, it often doesn't work as planned. And even if it does, it often means walking from A to B and sometimes to C to catch a connecting train. Over time, this builds a habit of brisk walking, especially if you've had to run for the S-Bahn one too many times. And let's not forget the health aspect. Walking isn't just a pastime, it's wellness. Germans love fresh air, especially in the form of a good old Waldspaziergang, a walk in the woods. It's part exercise, part mental hygiene. But they don't dilly-dally about it. This is movement combined with cardiovascular benefits. Last, there's also a psychological factor to take into account. Studies have shown that people in cultures with a high focus on punctuality and structure, think Germany, Switzerland, or Japan, tend to walk faster. And indeed, the average preferred walking speed here is noticeably higher than, say, in Southern Europe or North America. So, next time you find yourself panting through a nice relaxed walk with your German friends, remember, you're not out of shape. You're just up against a generation of punctual, forest-loving power walkers. And if you can't keep up, don't worry. Just enjoy the scenery at your own pace.
That's all for today's episode. Marlene, thank you so much, as always, for being our great producer. And thank you all for being a part of our show. Stay curious, flirt with life, and hasta la próxima.